only I could find a real man.
I need to use your phone. She'll call you back.
Who are you?
Bond, James Bond. Exercise Control 007 here. I'll report in an hour.
Won't you join me?
Better make that two.
You're listening to League Podcast, League versus the Living Daylights. I'm Matt Durson.
I'm Hunt, John Hunt.
Clay Ann Saunders here.
I forget, we don't really have a name for this, like
bounding through Bond.
Doubling. Whatever. Yeah, like, well, yeah, bounding through Bond.
Dashing through Dalton.
Dashing through Dalton, that's
or
that's
you could
one.
Just be Dashing Dalton.
Dashing Dalton. Yes, yes. So we are doing the first of two Timothy Dalton movies. It's all he got, The Living Daylights. There's a little bit of a...
But also one of John's...
it's a favorite
John's
of mine.
Bands.
Yeah.
The
I like this song. I like Aha.
You could almost tell me that Duran Duran wrote this song and I wouldn't be surprised. But it's a great song.
Yes, it's very good.
There's a little history, though, of course, because we are turning over the reins from Roger Moore to Timothy Dalton. But there was like, there was drama. Good word. Good word. Pierce Brosnan almost got it here. He would later get it in 1995 with GoldenEye. But
yes,
there was all kinds of weird stories. In fact, Timothy Dalton almost got it like way back in the 70s, I read.
Yeah, there was
Her Majesty's Secret Service.
I would like to dispel one of those rumors. He was an actor being considered, but he never actually met with anyone.
I thought Cubby really liked him, though.
He did like him, but it was one of those things where I wish I had researched this part a little better. I know this from something else from a while back, so my memory is a little hazy. I apologize. But it was essentially like they threw his name out there. Someone said to Timothy Dalton, they were like, hey, they're looking for a new James Bond. He was pretty much like, no, I'm too young for that. And that was
pretty much, it was Dalton.
But they did come back to him later on in the 70s as a possible thing. So I just wanted to dispel the rumor that they approached him with a formal offer back in, like, for Her Majesty's Secret Service. That was not actually the case.
Ah, I see. Well, it is kind
this
of...
This never like, happens it, with the other guy.
Well, the interesting thing, I mean, like, the article you sent us, that People magazine article from 1980-whatever...
Six.
Said, like, basically, if you're a male actor with a British accent, you will be considered for James Bond.
what else is interesting about that was Dalton hadn't been signed to the role yet at that point, so there was no one. Pierce Brosnan was already out, and they were like, and even Timothy Dalton's name has been thrown into the mix, you know. So yeah,
some of those people I didn't
raw deal.
Yeah,
the time.
Yeah, one really quick. Well, we'll talk about Pierce Brosnan, but I want to say Sam Neill, I think, would have been okay. I would have been all right with Sam Neill.
I've seen a little bit like this. Yeah, screen test, and I thought he would have been a great Bond.
Yeah.
Except Cubby Broccoli didn't for some reason.
Cubby seemed a little particular.
And Brolin.
Yeah. Well, he was going to take over for Roger Moore in Octopussy.
It's crazy. How do you feel with Roger Moore? And you're like, why are they keep putting on these guys? I thought I was doing a good job. I don't know.
Roger Moore was like, he had a contract for three. And then after that, it was a contract by, you know, movie by movie basis kind of thing. And he wasn't going to come back for Octopussy. So they had got Brolin all set, and then Never Say Never Again was announced. And like, we can't go up against another Bond movie with a new Bond. We got to use an established one. So they lured Roger Moore back. And then after Octopussy made more money than Never Say Never Again did. They said, Raj, come back for one more, your last one. And that was that. They had that agreement. Like, they didn't have to go through the whole negotiation thing. They were like, yep, we want you back for one more. He said, okay, I'll do one more. And he came back for A View to a Kill. And then he said, I'm 8,000 years old. I really should stop. Like, I'm older than my co-star's mother. You know, this right. is a bad idea. You know, I got this weird facelift and I look surprised throughout the whole movie. Yeah. And Roger Moore said, like, Pierce Brosnan should be the guy. So, and he
okay.
had Abby on set of For Your Eyes Only when his wife Cassandra Harris was a Bond girl in that film.
Wow. So yeah, there's a lot of history there.
Right? Yes.
So Pierce Brosnan was doing Remington Steele, which how many years was that? 5 years?
Yeah, well, like that.
And, yeah. Was it 5 years and then sort of the
I'm
drama?
I'm not sure. I think it came out.
It wasn't even a full year. So, okay. The article that you sent, he is done with Remington Steele. And he's like, great, now I can be James Bond. And then NBC says, oh, you're going to be James Bond? Let's sign you on for another 6 episodes of Remington Steele.
Yeah. They did it 3 days before that time was to expire.
Right.
But it was really last minute. They were like, oh, man, look at the ratings of Remington Steele have like blown up because he's going to be James Bond. So, yeah, it was.
And it kind of had an adverse effect on Cubby Broccoli's opinion. And he said, well, you're not going to coattail ride our James Bond announcement. Remington Steele is not going to be James Bond.
And also, like, TV had a much different reputation back then in the film world. Like, oh, it's this TV show. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of seen as this kind of low rent kind of thing. Yeah, but I mean, like 6 episodes.
It was they were TV movies, so it was really it would probably be more of the equivalent of like 12 episodes or so.
Pierce had been kind of bad mouthing him too. He's like, I can finally
get rid of this crap. This
crap
junk
show
that I've been doing. Here's the interesting thing about when they renewed Remington Steele because of him being James Bond. So then he loses out on James Bond, but Stephanie Zimbalist lost out on the role of Lewis in RoboCop because
that's
of
right.
the show being renewed. So
I saw that in a YouTube video I watched. So it's not just Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah,
everybody.
Both of them got fucked. And Stephanie was this in the article I sent where she was like, I don't want the show to be remembered as the show that starred Pierce Brosnan. I was supposed to be the star. And it's remembered for the show that Pierce Brosnan was on.
You know? Completely is. Sorry, Stephanie, but it's I mean, I don't know if it'd be remembered at all if he didn't go on to become.
Yeah,
James
I
Bond.
Agree. Yeah,
there was a stuff in that article about like they wanted to be more like what Moonlighting was doing.
Yeah, one of the writers for Moonlighting was the Remington Steele created Moonlighting, as I recall.
Yeah, there was a little bit of professional jealousy, I think, going on
mm-hmm.
there. Pierce Brosnan wanted to be taking more risks.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wanted to do that in the Bond movies too, and they didn't do it until Daniel Craig came along. He was like, "Damn it,
I'm missing out on all of it." So then Timothy Dalton,
Timothy
was doing?
Dalton
Taming
was doing
of the
that,
Shrew. Something
he was
like
doing
that
crappy Brenda Starr movie at first when they first offered him the role, and then that there was some sort of delay or something that allowed or something changed with the filming schedule, and he was able to work it out, but. Oof,
yeah, I think
Brenda
it was
Starr.
A strike or some weird
yeah.
thing, wasn't there? Yeah, something happened. I gotta say, I hadn't seen this movie in a long time, but Timothy Dalton, I think he's kind of remembered as kind of a boring sort of Bond
he,
or
he
not
was like
as...
the humorless,
yeah,
like angry Bond. But at the time, we coming off of 7 Roger Moore movies,
right?
You know, everybody was sort of used to that take. And instead, he's more like the proto-Craig now. Everybody sort of reassessed his two films and they're like, he was doing Craig before Craig was doing Craig.
He's a little bit more Fleming. He's a little bit more people. I didn't come up with that. But a lot of people say that. He's just trying to be.
He's the closest to Fleming's.
Closest to, yeah.
Well, there are a couple of quips, though, that don't quite work, you know, because he's kind of serious. But I don't mind him, actually.
Yeah, I think he was actually pretty good Bond.
Yeah.
I think his humor is like, it comes off when he does a little quip, it comes off kind of a little bit more like just Dead Man.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. than like a Roger Moore, like.
Well, yeah, he Roger doesn't Moore have that
a big old grin.
And yeah, that
raise shitty an eyebrow and yeah. Really make a big deal out of it. By the way, it is pouring here, and I don't know if all the rain is coming through my microphone. So sorry if it is.
I can actually hear a little bit of rain
and thunder. So.
Oh, it stopped raining here, but it was pouring earlier. But well,
I'll try to keep myself muted as much as I can.
Now I have to go to the bathroom. Thanks. No, just kidding.
Speaking of going to the bathroom, the amount of times people go to the bathroom in this movie, I didn't really notice it until today. I was like, there's a lot of bathroom in this.
Well, yeah, he takes the gun in there.
Yeah, the bad guy leaves to go to the bathroom when they're looking at the heart. And and then he climbs out over the toilet stall. There's a window. Yeah. There's a lot of bathroom in this movie.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess works.
Is there a lot of washing hands?
That's the problem. Yeah. See? No washing hands. All right, let's get it. So the budget of this movie was $40 million, and the total box office, that's all time, $191.2 million.
Pretty
good. Released in London, June 29th, 1987, and in the United States, July 31st, 1987.
Oh, thank God there was no internet there, because...
Yeah, we would have spoiled...
I would have been like, I can't wait to find out. I got to go on some sort of spoiler-filled message board or video or something.
I remember seeing this, actually. I think my aunt took me to see this movie in the theaters. I must have been 11 or so, or 12. No,
yeah,
11.
Younger. I was 14 when it came
out. I was 11 years old. I had just turned... If it was July 31st...
87.
In 1987, then I was 11 years old. But there's not a lot of sex and stuff, so I guess it doesn't matter.
There is side boob in it.
There is. So
and
yeah,
butts too.
Do you know? Yeah, in you know how Amazon, thanks to Clay, I watched this on Amazon. They tell you like smoking, whatever. Like
violence.
They tell you like what's in the movie, and it does say nudity. And I was like, oh, how about that? And it's
hello.
Like, yeah, it's like a little side boob in men's butts. I'm like, oh. All right, whatever.
Well, I think
like Necros is walking around in that banana hammock.
Well, I guess that guy was a model, right?
Yeah, he's in Die Hard too. He's one of the.
Yeah, he was the brother of the main. The first guy he kills, Andreas Wisniewski.
Sure, sounds about right. He's in a couple Mission Impossible movies too.
Yeah, how about that? All right, so what do you think this gun barrel? We got to start all of our Bond podcasts
I like the gun barrel. It looks essentially like it's the same plate as the Roger Moore gun barrel. But I like the music, the walk, the gun, boom. I'm pleased with it.
The blood looks like blood. It's not like or like some of
them. Yeah, it's not like pink. And the swaying of the barrel kind of like slows a little bit as it goes back and forth. It or what they call easing. And look it.
All right. Very good. All right. So we get Robert Brown is back as M. And I love they're doing this sort of G.I. Joe style exercise where the 00 agents.
I was thinking G.I. Joe a lot during this movie.
I think you just think G.I. Joe a lot.
Yeah, no,
that's
I was
not,
like,
that's not in general.
That is true. But no, I was thinking like that. This is what appealed to me when I first watched it kind of thing,
So yeah, these 00 agents have to break into this facility to test the whatever.
Each of these guys is supposed to have a vague resemblance to another Bond actor, which I didn't really see. Like one guy is supposed to be sort of George Lazenby-esque. Another guy is supposed to be kind of Roger Moore-esque. That guy sort of looks more like the guy from Bewitched to me rather than like Roger Moore. But yeah,
I didn't recognize it either. It's 002 and 004.
What about me? I wasn't there. I was invited to the Rock of Gibraltar mission.
He had a clown mission he had to be on. But he was too busy.
We need you.
His umbrella is just like a big cement block. Not umbrella, parachute.
I was going to say, all right. Maybe his parachute was an umbrella. That would be even funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I meant.
All right. So, they parachute in. One of them gets the red paint thing, it's like the gun is like red paint. But it's a farce that the guy shoots them for real, like the bad guy. And then the other guy is like climbing down. And he does the I can't remember. I didn't write it down. This Latin phrase, or not Latin? It's
like smiet spionum or something like that.
Yeah, he like shoves it down on the little like
on a rope on, like
on a rope
little, with a, like a little tag, and you think yeah, and it slides down the rope, and then he reads little clearance sale.
It's kind of like they're trying to set you up to almost think that James Bond is getting like
that James Bond is playing James Bond.
But he cuts the rope, the guy falls, and we see Bond like the first time.
I think this is the best reveal of any Bond actor reveal. I know everyone goes like the Sean Connery lights his cigarette, Bond, James Bond, Dr. No, it's Casino. But this is, I think, the dramatic push in, which is actually Dalton is the it's the last thing he filmed.
The
shot. Yeah. Interesting. They did it as a pickup shot like well after the fact.
Wow. Interesting. Bond starts to go after the other guy. He gets shot with the red paint, which is kind of fun. He just shumps the guy over and jumps on the roof of the bad guy's car. And I love the guy's like, "Oh, Dalton, you're dead."
It's a- I have a little knowledge drop about this bad guy actor that's going around killing everybody.
All right.
He was unemployed at the time. His wife was at work. He gets a call from Eon Studios, and they say, "Hey, we'd like you to come play this bad guy. You want to come in?" And he's like, "Well, I'm an unemployed actor. I'm taking care of my baby." Yes. Drops the baby off at the neighbor's house, leaves a note to his wife that says something along the lines of, "Baby at the neighbor's, I'm off to Gibraltar."
Wow. That is so funny.
I mean, when you're an unemployed actor, you don't turn down.
Yeah, you got to take the gigs when they come in.
Yeah, can't be like, "Oh, well, I got a kid here," or whatever. So, yeah, he's driving along. His baby's in the car seat in the Jeep. It's really bizarre, but and he's trying to get Bond off the roof. I love it. So he's driving towards one of those gates, and the guys with the paint guns are shooting at him. So that doesn't do any good. Like they get run over, basically. And
but then two other guys with real guns.
Yeah, and they shoot it with real bullets.
And, of course, this Jeep is filled with explosives.
Yeah, every Jeep in every Bond movie has to have explosives. I don't know.
Little knowledge drop here, too, is that that is actually Timothy Dalton on the roof.
Yeah, he's doing it in a bunch of those shots, except for that bad rear projection shot that they inserted in a couple times.
Well, it's a James Bond movie. You have to have
a bad rear projection
shot in there. Oh, that's we're right. Skiing.
Yeah,
in front of a movie theater.
So yeah, Bond eventually he's got his knife. He cuts his way into the thing, and they fight. And of course, Jeep goes careening off a cliff. Bond pulls his ripcord out. I don't know. Is that a reference to Octopussy, or is that just a way to get him out of this Jeep?
I think this is just how to get him out. But the thing in Octopussy was he just pulled their chutes and they floated away. At least this time he kicks out the window.
Yeah.
And to get a – yeah. I don't
know.
Thankfully, he doesn't get completely burned while he flies out the back through all the boxes and explosives that are on fire. So.
Well, this is a cool visual, though. Yeah, as the Jeep is falling off a cliff, it explodes.
And I thought that was another knowledge drop for you is I think that's done with a miniature, but they had originally started trying by dropping Jeeps from a plane
in the Mojave Desert.
Yeah.
So that $40 million budget was like, I mean, how many thousand was just Jeeps? Yeah. All right, try some Jeeps
and Aston Martins.
So anyway, the shrapnel cuts up his parachute, which he doesn't cut him up, thankfully, but it cuts up his chute. But he is able to sort of navigate, and he lands on this yacht that's just out there, and there's a lady on it. And this
he
is
does
something
a nice little flip too.
Yeah,
that he's the physical
off the roof down into the under the the sort of the. What do you call it?
Every time I watch this, I'm like, "Ooh, those are nice boots. Do you have to be a paratrooper to have those boots?" I keep looking at his boots.
Meanwhile, James Bond's like, "Oh, those are nice boobs." the lady in the bikini.
Maybe he'd be like, "Oh, those blue boots of yours are pretty cool. Do you have to be a pussy to have those blue boots?"
No.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. I love it though. So she's on the phone, which is a 1987 sort of
cell phone kind of thing.
Yeah, cordless phone. And she's wishing something exciting would happen. Or a
she's
man.
Like, oh,
she
it's can't so boring. Yeah, everybody, yeah. Playboys.
And then, I watched this, one of the, that guy Calvin that does James yeah. Bond things. And he's like, she's begging for something exciting to happen. Like, she doesn't hear all these gunshots.
All right.
Like, car goes flying. And
yeah, there's explosions. Like a Jeep that's just exploded like 20 like, feet away.
Like, come on now.
Nice. What? Here's her backstory. Here's the no prize. She's deaf. She wasn't wearing a hearing aid in that year, and I forget who she's talking to. It's
her
also
friend.
Yeah, whoever is speaking really loudly, so she can't hear. Like her left ear, she took out the hearing aid, and the right ear, she's listening to the phone. So yeah, no, she didn't notice.
All right, no well, there you
that's
good
the
enough.
Best I got.
That works. And this is something that I feel like you and I used to say to each other a lot, John,
yes,
somehow.
Yes,
he grabs the phone from her and says, she'll call you back.
Yeah, and we'd always say it like that.
Yeah.
And then we'd also whenever we talk about Timothy Dalton, we'd always go, Bond, James Bond.
Yeah, right, Bond, James Bond. Because that's who she says, who are you? And he says, Bond, James Bond. And then he calls for, like, pickup. And he says, an hour. And then she's like, oh, and she holds out a glass of champagne. He says, better make that two.
Which is the same joke they actually did in From Russia with Love, except he said, make it an hour and a half. So this Bond lasts, he's got more stamina.
Oh, yeah. He's
got his hands.
Yeah.
That's right. That's a good line. I mean, I it's well done. I think it establishes right off this is, this is Timothy Dalton. This is Roger Moore, brother. Oh, maybe you better make that 2 hours there, won't you, M? You know, and or something like that. Nothing against
a lot of
Roger Moore.
No, we love
as
Roger
one
Moore.
Does.
Yes.
Right. He would be exactly. He'd be a lot more smarmy, I feel like, about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is good. And then we got aha! Aha!
Now, so we may have talked about this in the James Bond music episode. About how John Barry and Aha did not get along, and John Barry and Duran Duran didn't get along, and John Barry, I think, wouldn't get along with anyone that didn't do what he said, you know?
Well, yeah, and that I think we talked about this in that episode. They kind of said he was kind of a dick, right?
Yeah. Well, the Andy Taylor, what was it? John Taylor came right home and said he was a dick. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And did he quit? Because of this, like after this, was this his last one? Because
this is his last Bond score, which is it's a really good score. I feel
sure.
It's very 80s in some places, but still I like it. But he was probably like, I've done however many of these and I'm just getting tired of dealing with these young people. And I'm like a crotchety old guy now. And I've won an Academy Award or something probably at this point. So I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm done. The 25... was the 25th anniversary of Bond. I'm going to go do something different now.
I was just going to say also he's got a collaboration with the Pretenders, one of my favorite bands.
And he actually got along very well with them. So,
Well, she was Chrissy Hynde is a woman.
Oh.
Maybe that has something to do with it.
Might.
She doesn't like the young men. She likes a woman. Well, anyway, it's a good song. Yeah, we did talk about it a little bit on our Songs of 007 episode. So go listen to that.
Yep.
This isn't a very exciting opening
like
kind
the,
of thing. It's
like
very
the visuals.
Kind of bland.
Yeah. You know what? The next
not
one.
Not one of the best.
The
not
next
my
one
favorite.
Is, it's not my favorite either. The next one's even worse. Even at the time that it came out, I was like, wow, this looks like something done in the early 70s or something. It's not well done at all. But yeah, Maurice Binder was the title guy. He's like, he ended up like reusing shit all the time after a while. So it was just like getting lazy about it. So,
well,
getting real lazy with it.
Oh, hey.
Oh! Lazy.
I also wanted to point out that this, the pre-title sequence is when we worked at the video show place. We used to have a, best action scenes video that we would run in the store that I made. So we didn't have to watch trailers all day. And I did put this opening, this Bond opening in there as one of the best action scenes.
It is a great action scene.
Good one.
Yeah. So we are in Czechoslovakia now. Bond is going to this concert, like not an AHA concert,
that would have been
like a classical orchestra kind of thing. His comrade Saunders is mad that he's late. I feel like this is kind of similar to the Craig, his other guy. He gets in a fight with the other guy, sort of. We see they're looking out this guy Koskov, who is the guy from The Fugitive.
That's how
I know him.
Yeah. Anyway. I think at the time I was like, oh, the guy from The Living Daylights.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. But
it's like, what's his name? Kravitz is his last name. But it's
Jeroen.
It's like Jeroen. Something like that.
Jeroen. I don't know if the J is.
The J is pronounced like a Y.
Yeah.
Like anyway.
Might be Yorgin. Yeah. Stop J. Let's call him Krabby.
Good old Krabby.
They're looking at him. And they check out this lady who's playing the cello. Miriam Dabo?
Diabo.
Okay. And I actually have knowledge to drop. You guys this, but conducting the orchestra is actually John Barry in a cameo.
Yes. No doubt.
Yeah. So they, Bond and Saunders go across the street. There's this apartment. They explain that Koskov is a top KGB agent and it's just all that. Bond's got this huge sniper rifle. They're supposed to be protecting Koskov. So, yeah, he goes to take a whiz, as you pointed out. But then he climbs out the window. And the cello girl, Miriam, she's the sniper. She's got a gun. So Bond is supposed to take her out. But he just shoots the rifle out of her hands. Saunders thinks he just missed deliberately because she's a hot chick. He's like, oh.
Bond's gun is completely ridiculous. It's like it's like Rob Liefeld drew the thing. There's like so many connectors.
They said that they added on it. A bunch of stuff just to make it look even more crazy.
I think it's awesome. I think it's great.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
no complaints. It's ridiculous. Look like it looks like cable.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Koskov runs. They get him into a car. Bond gets in the car. They drive off. They leave Saunders. And he's like, "I'll come back for you." I kind of thought, "Oh, this guy's dead," but
he wasn't. Well, not till later.
Later he's dead. So they go to the Trans-Siberian pipeline. They shove him into it. Like, that's it. He's like, "You've done this before, right?" It's like, "You're the first." Boom. See you later. Like, he's off.
And then he's gotta get his big Russian lady to distract the guy by unzipping her jumpsuit. That guy who's being distracted was the guy that makes the fake Fabergé egg in Octopussy, I believe.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an 80s thing. I feel like the big Russian woman be like, oh, hello.
Oh, yeah, here I am. Then all the controls settle down and she's like, zips up and she's like, what kind of girl you think I am? Walks out.
Yeah. He throws the switch. The alarms and everything go off. The guy doesn't even notice. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, the earth moved. That's how amazing.
Because, his face was in her tits.
Tits. Yeah. It's an ass.
An ass. So he makes it to Austria, and there's Q, just like, they get him on a plane, and he's out.
In the shot where the plane flies across the screen, I didn't notice this until I was listening to a podcast about it, but it looks like it flies in Saunders' left ear and then out his right ear, just by the positioning of the, like, the angle of the shot.
That's funny. I didn't notice that.
That's another G.I. Joe thing, too, because remember the blue Cobra plane,
the Rattler.
The vertical takeoff and landing. It's like,
that was cool.
Obsessed with vertical takeoff and landing when I was a kid.
So yeah, Bond does go to pick up Saunders, and he's like, Saunders is gonna rat him out. He's like, I'm gonna tell him and you didn't shoot the girl, man. Yes. That girl.
He says, stuff my orders.
Yeah,
which
that
made
was.
Me think of our friend Bob.
Oh, yeah.
Stop it.
Stop ya. Yeah, because he's like, your orders were to kill her. And he says, stuff my orders. And he says, I only kill professionals. She was not a real sniper.
But she was a professional cello player. So, I mean, he didn't...
That's true. What kind of professional? She wasn't sure of herself. And he knew that it was just all a setup. And, of course, he has to drop the name. He says, I bet I scared the living daylights out of her.
Then he turns, winks at the camera, and then goes, and then says, that's all, folks. It's like, that's so weird for a Bond movie.
That was... I thought they were going to be more serious. I gotta say,
joking aside, I don't mind it.
I actually think the first, like,
charming
20 minutes are great, or like perfect Bond, Fleming Bond. Sure. I was like, when I saw it, because I did see it in the theater with my pop, and I was like, whoa, this is so much different than Roger Moore. I like it. Although I kept going, I wish Pierce Brosnan was doing this, though. But I liked it. Yes.
Yeah. So Bond goes to Universal Exports, which is MI6. She's Q, and Caroline Bliss as Moneypenny.
Right now, she gets a lot of crap. Most people think she's the worst Moneypenny. I happen to like her, but I think
she's kind of hot.
Yeah, I do too. She reminds me a little bit of the, how do I say, because I wasn't married. Well, I always call, you know, Mrs. Elder, the almost Mrs. Elder. She has a little bit of that to her.
So. All right. Well, you're a little biased, but yeah. No, just kidding. No, I think she's great. I mean, I don't know why they think she's the worst. But
she's got nothing. She doesn't do anything, really.
Right.
Other than come over and listen to some Barry Manilow. And even, I don't think that would get me to go.
But what is she supposed to be doing? What's Moneypenny doing?
What does Moneypenny do in most movies?
No. Right. Other than the
Craig movie, she does a little.
Right.
You know,
right.
But like,
exactly. She shoots James Bond.
Yeah. Other than that. But, yeah.
Way to go, Moneypenny.
This is what.
Money penis.
This is what Moneypenny does. She gives them some information. They make a couple quips.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Flirts a little bit and then. Right. And scene.
She's using the computer, and just like every other 80s to 90s to even 2000s movie, and even later James Bond movies, it's like, well, yeah, this is my computer terminal right here, but obviously over here on the wall is the display for the thing, which is a gigantic, like all of the evidence and stuff, you know, even like Q and the Craig movies, it's like, well, yeah, let's just punch that up on this gigantic wall of monitors. Yeah.
No one look at this personal email I'm writing right now.
Yeah. So he has to sort of look up the cellists, I think, right? That's basically her job here. But we do see one thing I noticed. Bond is smoking.
Yes. Here.
This must have been smoking. But this is probably it. I don't know if he smokes in the next one, but I know. Obviously, Pierce Brosnan never smoked.
Pierce Brosnan smokes a cigar, but not a cigarette.
Right, right.
And he also punches a guy in the face for smoking.
That's right. Filthy habit, isn't that what he says?
Yep.
So, yeah, but this is just like, I'm sitting down chatting, and it's like Don Draper. Like, you just...
Yeah, well, I've been watching all these old movies, and it's just like every scene is someone going through a pack of cigarettes in like movies from, you know, the 20s up until the 80s, you know, more nicotine.
That was a thing. That's what everybody did back then, I guess. It looks cool. I mean, let's face it. That's why you did it.
But then you died.
And the addiction.
We can't forget about our friend Desmond Llewellyn here.
This is the movie where he goes from, you know, curmudgeon to sort of like wacky inventor uncle guy, you know, where he's not like angry at Bond all the time. He's actually more of like buddies with him.
Oh, that's nice.
The ghetto blaster.
Yeah. Yes, and the guy, this like thing that he's like, yeah, it's this boombox that turns into a bazooka. And the guy that he's testing it on looks like George the Animal Steel. It's like a big ball of guy. Listen to our Ed Wood episode.
Yes.
Yeah, those are the, that's, and a couple other things, right? Or no, they're later. They're later. Never mind. Yeah.
Because there are two QQ scenes that it messes me up too.
So, but he does ask Moneypenny to pick up the cellist and he spanks her in the ass. That's
man talk.
Yep. Just locker room. So
you're James Bond playing James Bond. You can do anything.
Yeah, right. That's right. They let you. And so we have this farm and this guy Necros, who we spoke about earlier. He's like
Mr. Banana Hammock himself.
Yeah, well, he's wearing clothes here. He actually takes. He chokes out this milkman with his like Walkman.
Headphones. I was saying to Mrs. Elder, I was like, how would you do that now with everybody with their, you know, Bluetooth earbuds? Just shove them in the guy's throat or something. I don't know how you do it. And he's always listening to the same song too.
Yeah.
Every time I see those headphones, I get very nostalgic for like loving using a Walkman. Cause I had like a very, like around this time when we were like 10 or 11 years old, I had like a really good Sony Walkman, and all I can think of is like, wow, those headphones wouldn't be able to like produce the amount of sound that I need to hear the music in them. You know what I mean? They're all like very tinny and like, but I loved having a Walkman. Oh my God. If you wore a pair of headphones while you were like hanging out with your family or something, it would be like being pretty antisocial. Now everybody's just staring at their phone. You know what I mean?
Right. It's the same thing. Yeah. So anyways, takes the milkman's place. They're on this like farm, but I should point
it's
out.
Like this, it's not like a farm. It's no, like but a giant it's estate. Like,
yeah, I guess that's a better way to put
it's
it.
It's the safe house for
That's right, for Koskov. And Bond shows up with like a picnic basket. It's like Yogi Bear.
There are things that Bond does in this movie that you just kind of don't expect. Shows up with a picnic basket, rides in a bumper car, you know? It's just,
hey, boo boo.
Yeah, it just
all right to Harris and get you this picnic basket.
So yeah, Koskov's there. They're all like, he's like, James, and he kisses him on the cheek and everything. Yeah, and caviar Bollinger.
Yeah, well, that's it. When Emma's like, what the fuck? And he shows up, hands him like the receipt, and he's like, well, you know, the stuff you had on here was questionable quality, so I took the liberty to get the good stuff, essentially. I don't like the guy that, what are we going to call him, Krabby? his acting choices in this, it's like he's in a different movie than Dalton is. Dalton's in like a serious drama, and Krabby is in a Roger Moore Bond movie. It's just I'm like, well, this is like kind of hurts.
I feel like a lot of Bond movies have like the one guy that's
the like one guy that's always like, hey, what's going on? Oh boy, I'm Russian. I'm crazy Russian.
Koskov, so he has this list of spies that are being targeted by this General Pushkin. And so that's like
to drop another bit of knowledge right here that originally it was General Gogol, who we had been seeing since The Spy Who Loved Me. He was supposed to be it, but I guess he had some health problems, so they had to rewrite it so that they just came up with someone new. And they were like, you know what? Let's make him Sala.
Yes. John Rhys Davies plays Pushkin. So Bond and M and the other guy, they all leave. And now Necros is still there. And then he kills the cook. Then he gets into a fight with the butler. So like,
such
the guy
seed. It's like bizarre. James Bond is just gone from like 40 minutes of the movie now. And it becomes about the butler.
Yeah, him and the butler fight it up. So the thing that I thought was funny is like they're fighting over this like electric knife. Necros is about to get like stabbed with this electric knife. He pulls the plug out of the wall, but it's still a knife.
Yeah,
it's still sharp, right?
You just won't carve it smoothly, so you won't be able to serve Necros to for the family dinner.
So he throws the finally KOs the butler, and then he throws this like milk bomb or whatever that was.
Yeah, it's like it is a milk bomb. It just sounds funnier when you say it. It's a glass of that. It looks like a glass of milk that's actually a grenade, essentially. Mm.
Yeah.
I have a little knowledge drop just in here, interspersed in this scene, is the parrot. The parrot, whose name is Crone, was actually in another James Bond movie, too. So the parrot actor was in two,
wow,
count them, two James Bond movies.
For Your Eyes Only was the other one. And here's a little extra knowledge drop. It was owned by Diana Rigg. Was it on Her Majesty's Secret Service? So,
wait. So the parrot was in as many movies as Timothy Dalton was.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I want to say something else. I remember when Pierce Brosnan was hemming and hawing about doing a third Bond movie. I was talking about this to you, and you're like, "Ah, you gotta do three. Dalton did two. You gotta do more than Dalton."
Fine. Yeah,
I guess he had to do. Yeah. He didn't want to be the one guy. I mean, Lazenby.
Right. Well, he was supposed to do three originally, right?
Yeah, he was. But we'll get into that when we do the License to Kill episode.
All right. So anyway, yeah, he captures Koskov. He burns the list, and then like he dresses up as a doctor, and they take Koskov away in this medical helicopter thing, like a medevac kind of, or I don't know what you call that, but I like it says G. Huey on the side.
G. Huey Lewis in the news.
That was a G. they had to they rented the helicopter and then they put the Red Cross stuff on it, so it was like, more like just
but
like
which regular... of which the Red Cross was like, we didn't give you permission to use our cross. We don't. You're using this to take bad guys away and stuff. That'll be.
It's just
$1,400.
A Red Cross. It's 1400? Not the Red Cross.
Right.
A Red Cross, not the Red Cross. You don't know what it is. It could be a Swiss helicopter.
I think it's under fair use.
It's under fair use.
Talking so down to 700. 700.
Yeah.
700 pounds. Get that parrot crone. 700 pounds. 700 pounds.
Give us a kiss.
All right, so Bond and M, you know, are talking, and Bond wants to go after Pushkin because they're like, you know, he doesn't think he's crazy, but he's like, your name is on the list too. And
yeah, he's we like,
find out
Pushkin
that
wouldn't do this. I'll replace you. Yeah. With which 00 was he going to replace him with? It wasn't Clown.
Was a 9? No, I don't think. I don't remember. But yeah.
It was 008 because 008 is always the guy I think he threatens to replace him with. And 008 is always like outside the door listening, go, please God, please
come
don't,
on, come
don't,
on, come
don't.
On.
I wonder if that's like the ranking. Like, does it go like where, like, you know, like
001 gets
like
the
you want
early
to...
choice assignments?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you want to be the lowest number, maybe. And there's always like, it's like when you work a job and they're like, well, there's plenty of other people out there that have your job. They're just lining up for it. You know, you got you're 007, 008 right outside.
Em is sitting on social media typing, nobody wants to work anymore.
I got 001 here doing all the work.
Like I said,
even
N
is outside thinking he's going
to
have my job.
So I'm going to get L's job. Wasn't eight from GoldenEye? What's his name? The other guy in GoldenEye was that eight? Was he eight?
Eight or was he six?
Oh, I think you're right. I think he was six. Yeah. All right. So anyway,
I just want to say one more thing. This is the only scene where I feel that Timothy Dalton is dressed like James Bond. Like he's pulling it off. He's got a three-piece suit on. He looks real. He looks real good.
He liked, you know, like a leather jacket.
Yeah, he wanted to play Bond more casual attire. But the suit he was wearing in the scene before was a little ill-fitting. But this one looks good to me.
All right.
Then he wears the Obama like beige suit.
Yeah, that one's all right too. I don't like when he's wearing his members only jacket though.
That is pretty.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I kind of like it.
So yeah, his name's on the list, and we find out that Latin phrase meant death to spies. So yeah, it's all,
which is all in sense. A Fleming book. I don't remember which one though.
Uh huh.
Spear to spion.
It's actually a brand of European gum.
W-O.
Double your fun, double your O. right, so now we get the cute scene, and he gives him this thing that's a key ring finder. It's like you whistle and it will beep or whatever, but it also releases stun gas, and it can also be a bomb. And there's also a master key. And Q says it will open 90% of the world's locks.
How do you know that?
Like, what? Come on. That 10% you couldn't?
Which would do better.
I wanted them to go up and be like, oh, this must be in the 10%. Doors are open. All right. So, yeah, Moneypenny has found the cellist, and she tells her name is Kara Millville. And she's like a really good cellist.
Probably on display on the wall.
Yeah. Because
that's like right. Up monitor. There on the big screen for all to see. Like, hey, I hooked up with that chick.
It's like the kissing cam at like a sporting event.
But apparently she's like world renowned and great cellist and not an assassin. So, yeah. So he's going to take the Aston Martin out for a ride to go find this cellist. And she's like, it just got a new coat of paint.
It's not even dry yet. He's like, so I'll drive extra fast so it'll dry off quicker.
And this was like a return of the Aston Martin. Like you hadn't been in the movie for a few movies.
Yeah, Roger Moore never drove an Aston Martin in any of his films. He's the only Bond that didn't.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I actually like the design of this Aston Martin better than the more famous DB5 version. This looks more like looks kind of like a Mustang.
Very good.
I'm trying to remember the toy that I had. I think it was the DB5, but I got it probably when this came out. My grandfather gave it to me. A little ejector seat. Pew.
Yeah, that was when I mistakenly called it a dinky toy, and I actually meant not.
It was bigger. It was bigger than.
It was a corgi. I wish I still had that. I don't know where it is.
So anyway, he watches Kara play, and then he sort of stalks her on. She gets on the train with her cello, and he kind of stalking her a little bit. And then these KGB guys. They get on the train and arrest her.
Train fights. Many train fights. It's not really much of a fight.
How much of a fight?
The train conflict.
Yeah, it's more like train drama.
Yeah, train drama.
And Sala is there, as we say, Pushkin. He puts her in the car. And I like Bond takes her cello.
Cello case.
As we say, he goes into the shitter. And there's a rifle in there.
There's a bathroom number two.
And the guys are all like, what's he doing it? Because he's putting together his gun.
Yeah, everybody is really...
00-twunt.
That's only funny to us three, but that's okay.
Yeah, right. The funny thing is, dude, there's always people sweeping. I feel like there's a lot of people sweeping.
I've never seen anybody sweeping in a men's room that I've been in before. We've seen a guy with his pants down around his ankles at a urinal before for some reason. But I don't generally see someone sweeping. Mopping, maybe.
Yeah, maybe you'd mop.
Not sweeping, though.
But in like a train station restroom, they always never get swept or cleaned in any way.
Anything, yeah. They're just built and then left to just be on their own.
Yeah, that's it. You're on your... If you're using that, you're taking luck.
I hope you didn't catch anything.
So anyways, Kara gets home. And then her place has been
out that like she left her address inside the cello case.
Yes.
And that there was, did you say there was the rifle in there or did we just get caught up in the
suite? No. I thought I said it. He was being
That's a, like a return to sender kind of thing, like luggage.
Yeah.
Bag.
I mean, why did she have it with her?
Why did she have the gun?
Why didn't she like dispose of it a few days earlier? Just hanging around. All right.
Yeah, I don't know. No surprise there, I guess. Maybe she was going to the bathroom and she was going to
flush it down. To get rid of it.
So, well, in fact, when she goes to her place, it's been ransacked and Bond shows up there and he says he has thrown the gun in the river. So he did dispose of it.
Good man.
And he tells her she's being followed and the gun had blanks. It wasn't real and all that. And when Bond says, "Oh yeah, I helped Koskov get away," or whatever, and she's very excited about Koskov. She's like overjoyed that this guy's okay.
Yeah, he's pretending that he's his friend, and they're gonna reunite the two of them, and yada yada yada.
Yeah, yeah, she cannot wait. So,
not to be contradictory, but I do kind of like his members only sweater.
I don't
look.
Like this.
I think I'll bring it back.
This, he's got his leather jacket and stuff.
The leather jacket is good. Yeah,
that's fine. He's got a sweater. It's just when he switches over to that, that beige one. That I'm not a fan. I love I love earth tones. Don't get me wrong, but
I love an '80s style.
Well, there we go. Then we'll agree to disagree on this one.
Agree to disagree,
like gentlemen do,
as one does,
as one
as does. We should.
So anyway, he tells her she's being watched, and I kind of like this because they're gonna get away, and they pull this kind of cool switcheroo as the train is going by. So she goes into like a phone booth. The train goes by. Bond picks her up, but she left the cello case. But she's like, I need it. We need to go back for it. So they go back for it. And I love as he's shoving it in the back seat, he's like, why didn't you play the violin?
Yeah, it's a good guy.
That was a good line. Good line. Yep.
And then the KGB guy approaches the phone booth that they disguised her cello case as her.
Yeah.
Finds out it's a cello case disguised as her.
Yeah. This is apparently a very, I forget at what point in the movie they say that this is like an important cello, I guess.
It's a Stradivarius.
Yeah. Stradivarius.
And Mrs. Elder knew all this stuff. I was just completely ignorant to it being like important cellos. Right.
Very expensive, and they were...
And they all have their own names and stuff like that.
Oh. Hers is named Koskov.
No. Crabby.
So they're driving in the mountains, and then the cops find them, and it's kind of funny. They pull up next to him, and he lasers off the bottom of their car.
I love this scene. The scene is great. It's stupid, it's but fun.
It is. It's fun. You're right. I had no problem with it. I chuckled. I mean, if you really want to look into like, oh, there's not, this is going to be serious Bond.
It's still a James Bond movie. It's still going to have elements of weird, goofy stuff.
It's like Roger Moore like driving the boat up into the sidewalk and driving it around. It's like this technology is, I'm gonna cut the bottom of this this thing.
Yeah, it's just the top of the car goes sliding off when they hit the brakes. I don't think that's how it would really work, but I'm gonna go with it.
Whatever.
And of course he's like, she's like, oh, what's going on? And he's like, what does he say? My brain's not working.
I don't remember.
A few optional extras in
store. Oh yes, that's what he said.
Yeah. And she's like, and he's like, what? And he's like, salt corrosion.
Yeah, right.
We're familiar with in North Dakota here.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. We got a lot of that. Got to get that undercarriage.
Sprayed.
Yep.
Yeah, my undercarriage is very salty.
So they come up to a roadblock, and he gets his missiles out of the, front of the Aston Martin, and blows that away. And then they start driving like through the snow, and he's...
I like the fact that in Goldfinger, he has essentially what is a GPS. In this, he hands her like a giant map, like shoves it in her face, is like, where's this go?
Yeah, it's very cute. A map. Like a paper
How
map.
Quaint.
Oh, isn't that cute? So like they're driving. He drives through the house, and the house sort of goes with them, or whatever. It's like a
shed kind of thing, a barn almost.
Yeah. So the tires get blown off, and he uses the metal, or one of the tires, I should say. He uses the metal frame. Yeah, rim to cut a hole in the ice. I mean,
someone had pointed out that like that wouldn't work if you did that. But then someone no-prized this person that I was listening to that said was kind of like scoring glass, and then you hit it and it comes out. So I was like, all right, I can now buy it.
All right, I mean,
I believe
it.
Yeah, I'm in.
it wouldn't work. If you're gonna be like, it wouldn't work with James Bond.
Yeah, then what are you watching this movie
for? For a long day. So, but here we're coming up to one of my favorite scenes, though. So, I mean, whatever. But anyway, so the car, of course, has skis come out the bottom. He's pressing some of these buttons and that, and then they do the Batmobile thing with the flaming, the engine thruster thing in the back. Thruster. But then he crashes it and it blows up. Oh, now what are they going
to
do?
He set it to blow up.
Right. That's true. Yes, I did actually write that. Blows it up. Yeah, shorthand.
I got you. I'm sorry.
Blows it up. So then here we go. We get, this is my favorite scene in the movie. They hop in the cello case. They take the cello out. He's got the cello in his hand. And they like ride down the hill.
Use it as a sled.
Yeah, it's to great.
I would like to, here's a little knowledge drop. The director, John Glenn, was like, I would like to use the cello as a way, as a means to escape. And writer Richard Maybaum was like, I don't know, that sounds kind of dumb. And Cubby Broccoli was like, that's dumb. So he got a cello case and then sat in it. And they're like, oh, yeah, I guess it could work then, huh?
I heard him and Cubby took a ride together.
See?
Actually, yeah.
It was beautiful.
It's all it took was them to have the case and like sit in it.
Yeah.
And he's done many of these.
You mean John Glenn?
Bond movies.
His name is, John Glenn.
Yeah. I mean, when he's not, you know, flying in space and orbiting the Earth and stuff, he's directing James Bond movies.
Right. Yeah. Excuse me. John Glenn. But also a little knowledge drop that a lot of these scenes in Vienna, which, you know, we're gonna get there to one soon. But when they filmed that famous movie, The Third Man, he worked on that movie and he revisited a few of these locations in this particular movie. But yeah, he had this. He's great to listen to the commentary on for this because he's just like, I really wanted to do the the cello case thing, and they did not want to. But yeah, that's all it took.
One of the other things he said in the commentary, that Mrs. Elder was there with me when they were casting Miriam Diabo, was that she came in a very strange outfit, and he asked her if she had made the dress out of her grandmother's tablecloth.
Oh.
And Mrs. Elder was like, I think I would have just turned around and walked out right then. You know,
but she got the job.
A different time.
Yeah, it was a different time. You could harass women and no one would call you out for it.
Slap them on the ass.
Yeah.
Thanks,
do this
money
for me, will you? No. So they're riding down the hill. They're getting shot at. At one point, the cello gets shot, a little bullet hole through it, and he says, sorry.
Is what made fans of the Stradivarius cellist very upset that there was a bullet hole in this very famous. You know, maybe it was a prop one, or maybe they really did shoot one. But
I mean,
they're
dropping jeeps out of a
plane.
They're probably just like, let's buy a Stradivarian and dump it and shoot it. But anyway, so my favorite part, they're coming up to the border crossing gate. Then they just go under it. So Timothy Dalton, and you probably heard this too, like he wanted to do the thing. So they go under it. He tosses the cello up.
Yeah.
They go under it and he catches it and he did that. He like really did that.
He's awesome.
That's amazing.
And he has the great line, nothing to declare.
Yeah.
Just a cello.
I mean, that was a great.
Can I ask why there's a checkpoint at the bottom of a hill?
Yeah, with no, is there a road? I mean, who's coming in that way?
Good point. No prize that, world.
Yeah.
Not you, John, just the world.
Just the world.
People were sneaking in, maybe. They were like, you know what?
Build the wall.
People are skiing right in. Yeah, build the wall. Now we go to Tangiers. And Pushkin is there. And we get Joe Don Baker.
Yes.
The Brad Whitaker, who's obviously different than the character that he will play later.
Yeah, because he dies in this one. So.
Yeah. So he's got this weird like wax museum for dictators or whatever thing going on.
Yeah, he talked about that in the commentary and said he really didn't like that because they had to do like a plaster cast of his face. And he's like, I didn't enjoy that. They stick two straws up your nose and one out your mouth and then cover your head in plaster and you gotta sit still for a while. It's just not fun.
the punchline is that his armory there with all these like old military leaders like Genghis Khan is, and Hitler even, is all him. Yeah. They're all like, they're like Genghis Khan, but my face. Hitler, but my face. Like, why would you do that?
That's weird. It's pretty
no
weird.
No prize that world.
I think Joe Don Baker uses that Hitler with his face as his profile picture on all his social media.
Oh, no, really.
I'm kidding. I don't.
Yeah, he's got all these crazy guns, and then he wants to sell them, and Pushkin doesn't want them anymore. He said he wants his money back. And they're like, oh, well, I don't know. Whatever. It wasn't even that much money. I feel like it was like $550 million, I guess. I mean, that's 1987 dollars.
That's more than what the movie cost to make.
I mean, in like movie money. You know what I mean? It's almost like Austin Powers when he's like, $1 million. And they're like, your shell company makes $20 million a year, you know, or whatever. Bond and Kara arrive in Vienna. And she can't wait. She wants to see Krabby. Because he gave her the cello, apparently.
Oh, he's a little crabby.
He arrives at the hotel, and we get sort of the something that happens in a few Bond movies. He says, you want your usual room? And he says, oh, I'll be needing a second bedroom. Yeah, right.
They should have had the guy at the front go, oh, what? And then faint, you know?
Right. It's like, oh, are you have a few women coming? Maybe.
Oh yeah, it must need him for all the women that you have showing up tonight.
Yeah, you don't have enough. Yeah. So this is we also get the first reference to the shaken not stirred martini, which is nice. And then she wants to. He buys her this expensive dress, and he says, "Why not? Yorgi's paying.
Yeah.
Krabby will pay.
Krabby will. We'll put it on Krabby's card.
Yeah.
Put it on the Underwood account.
Yeah."
Stay tuned for our Fletch episode.
Oh, really? No, I don't know if we're doing that. All right. So meanwhile, Koskov, he's got all his babes. And Necros is there. And his
banana hammock. That, and then the other thing is Koskov has like weird, huge nipples.
I did not notice that.
Oh, yeah. They're kind of gross looking.
Ugh.
Yeah. I'll send you guys some pics.
Please do it. Yeah. So he and Necros and his thong.
They're like Joe Don Baker on his chest. Oh, God.
Flapjacks. They call him Flapjack Koskov.
But Flapjack Krabby.
So, okay, I'm going to admit the plot starts to get needlessly complicated. Here, I feel like, and I start to kind of lose track.
Hashtag same. I don't know the plot of this movie at all.
It's like, yeah, you guys go on. I'll try to jump in.
I guess I'm gonna start to explain it,
and then I was like,
I just totally agree with Durson. Like up to this point, I'm good. I know.
Yeah,
what's happening.
I was fine with it. So what is the deal? So let me see if I got. They were going to have Bond kill Pushkin and then
Yorgi can take over.
Right. But they're framing someone else, and they're going to kill Saunders and make look like Bond did it. Well, it ends up being Saunders, but they didn't say who, they just said another agent and frame Bond and whatever. It's all kind of, like I said, needlessly complicated.
Yeah, well, they want Bond to kill Pushkin so that Koskov can take over, and then Whittaker can sell him the arms.
Right.
I don't know where the opium figures into it.
That's where it kind of goes.
Where it's like they need. We'll get there.
Yeah. So was it like Pushkin was going to kill an agent so that Bond would think, oh, he's a bad guy and kill him? I don't even really know, but
Pushkin anyway, going to kill anyone.
Well, no, Koskov was good. Maybe you're right, Koskov. Yeah, doesn't matter. Yeah. All right, whatever. I start to lose track.
Mitchell
of
was going to send the banana hammock after. Sorry, right. Joe Don Baker. Right. Mitchell.
I was going to say, wait, that's not his name.
No, I just wanted to refer to him as Mitchell.
All right, so anyway, whatever, we'll get there. Kara and Bond go to the opera, and Saunders is there, and Bond says, yeah, look up what's going on with this cello.
Well, I just want to say something else, too. Is this the part where she leaves to go to the bathroom? Because that's like bathroom trip three.
Yeah. Chekhov's bathroom trip.
And hands like a strip of like pictures they took at a little photo booth, presumably, to get like, assuming she just did it by herself for some reason because he's not in any of the pictures.
Maybe he's like, it's okay. Crappy will pay.
Yeah. Just take a bunch from me.
Get some pictures of yourself.
Yeah.
It's like so
they have one of those at the Vienna Opera House.
Yeah. Where did she get that? I don't know. But then they go to the fair.
Who is still at the fair?
The fair. You know, he wins her this big stuffed elephant. Of course, it's kind of cheating. All right,
stop. I mean, stop.
Yeah, come on. I mean, he's James Bond, for Christ's sakes. It's one of those shooting games.
This is that third man reference as well.
Yes, the same Ferris wheel, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Same bumper cars.
And same scary thing that pops out at them.
Well, they go on the Ferris wheel, and he sees Saunders down on the ground. They're up there, and you see Saunders go into the cafeteria.
Yeah, like not down on the ground, but he is walking
on the ground. And we get some Carlsberg product placement, I see, in that cafeteria. It's like a huge Carlsberg sign. So that's nice. The Ferris wheel stops, and Bond says, I arranged it. And she's like, oh. And he puts the moves on her. She's been talking about Krabby this whole time.
He's like, enough. Krabby's got Krabby's.
Yeah. Like he just says, don't think. It's like, just make out with me. It's, yeah. Just don't think about it.
Don't think. Unzips his pants.
Little 80s. I don't know. But I mean, it's not done in a creepy way.
Yeah,
like, I will say. I mean, he's, you know, she's in.
I think he's legitimately into her at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. It's not done in that way. It's very innocent.
It's not done in the Roger Moore, Sean Connery kind of
right.
Where it's a little like.
Right. Oh, honey. So the Ferris wheel comes back to the ground and they're still making out in there. Then now he's like, I gotta go meet this guy. I gotta go see a guy about a horse. he goes to meet Saunders in the cafe, and Necros is.
Saunders has turned out to be okay at this point. He was kind of a whiny bitch at the beginning, but it's turned out like you're actually like, oh no, he's all right after all.
Yeah, did a good job.
Yeah, he's kind of like a little bit more on Bond's side. At this point in the movie, he's kind of like warming up.
Yeah, even when Bond is asking him to do something he probably shouldn't, he's like, what have I got to lose except my pension?
Yeah, yeah, he's all right.
So he's okay.
Well, they want you to set up that you feel sad when he is killed by Necros in a cool way, though. I mean, let's face it. So they're in the cafe. Necros is listening in. They're talking. And he sets Necros sets the glass door up. Like the sliding glass door to close on him as he's leaving.
I mean, that happened to me. The door closed on me one day, and I was like, ow.
Yeah, this guy's dead.
Yeah, thankfully, Necros didn't set it up that it would kill me. It just sort of annoyed me for a little while.
So Bond is like, oh, no, and he sees, like, a balloon. There was a balloon attached to him that had, the
death to spies.
Smeared in that sputum.
Thank you. Well done.
And I'm, like, looking at it.
With some intensity.
So many pups. Now he's mad. Now he's going to go.
So then he goes and
Whittaker.
Threatens a child and his mother.
Well, he sees a balloon. The kid's got a balloon and he's like, there they are. And then when he grabs her, he's like, did you cause that door to close?
And the kid's like, no, mommy. Actually, that is kind of funny where he pulls the gun on them. They're like, and he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. He actually does feel some regret there. Yeah.
Not pictured off camera, 009, filling the balloon.
Uncredited performance, but yes. So Bond's going to go to Tangier to get Whittaker and Koskov. So at this far, he follows Pushkin around, and he's sitting in his car, and he puts on these glasses that are basically binoculars, but I don't really. They're kind of weird. That's at that point, just use binoculars. Yeah, like, you're not fooling anyone.
Yeah, it's not like you're like being inconspicuous with these weird looking glasses, huh? And also, the producers had a deal with like the Audi cars. So that's why everybody's driving ugly boxy cars in this movie, except for the Aston Martin.
Oh, there. So he goes to his room there. Yeah, and Bond is in there, and he said, "This is not a social call."
Oh, he's like, "You should have brought lilies."
Yeah, he's really mad at him. And there's a lady.
Because she's all like nervous, and he's like, "Oh, what's wrong?" And then Bond is behind the door, and that's when he kicks him on the bed and says the line about lilies, which I feel that anyone else would have delivered it would have been, you would have noticed that was a funny line, but since he says it so seriously, I was like, oh, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, he's very mad. And like, so Pushkin calls on his watch. He uses his watch to call his guard.
The same guy from earlier that was in the car watching the phone booth and stuff.
That's right. That's right. It's Bond. I don't know. It's kind of weird. He hits him in the side with his gun, which is kind of not something you see that much in movies. So this is, he tears off the woman's robe. She's wearing like one of those like silky robes. And then the guard comes in and she's naked. And then Bond nails him from behind.
Yeah, that's your side boob right there.
That's my side boob. That's my nudity.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a Bond movie in the 80s.
Yeah, you didn't get much. I think you got some octopussy bum in the previous one. And
That's right. That's right. We go listen to our octopussy episode. Yeah. So he's about to shoot him. He's about to shoot Pushkin, and then they cut. And now Pushkin is giving a speech. He's standing at a podium, and Necros is about to shoot him, but then Bond shoots.
Yes.
Shoots him, and then shoots at Necros.
Shoots out the spotlight that he shines on Bond.
Yeah. So Bond runs, and he's on the roof, and he swings down the TV antenna. That's a kind of a funny. This is goofy.
There were a lot of gags that got cut out of this scene, thankfully. One where he hops on like a carpet and it acts like a magic carpet down like power lines or phone lines.
And it's in the deleted scenes. It's hilarious.
It's terrible. It's so bad. It just looks like it's moving half a mile an hour. So it just like very slowly descends. There's like another one where he knocks a guy into a vat of red dye and then says something like "better red than dead." Thank God they cut these out. There was like a gag in the last Q scene too, where the guy gets swallowed up by the couch. It like, but they cut it before, like in the original version, the guy gets out and like, you know, it comes out the other side behind it or something like that. So I'm like, no, the gag works better just having the couch swallow him. So, anyway. Continue.
But at this point, the one that they left in, he slides down the antenna or swings down with the antenna and lets go of it and swings back and hits the guy. And it's like a Warner Brothers cartoon with like a rake.
I feel like this could have been like under a better director. This could have been the scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they're getting chased around. By the sword Marion. Guys and stuff. But it is. And I'm gonna make a Raiders comparison later on in the movie too, which Raiders will win in that comparison.
Oh, all right.
It's almost like the Casino Royale parkour.
Yeah, but done not well. Done in the 80s John Glenn style, which I always feel that his directing is very one point perspective, kind of just like bland wide shot. You know, there's nothing dynamic.
Yeah, he's got a big wide shot of over the town or whatever. Yeah.
The only time he has any interesting shots in this is when Second Unit does the stuff. Like in the last scene where Saunders gets killed, but he's like, "I got the message." And it's like these close ups and like that was shot by Second Unit. It wasn't done by him. So I was like, oh, no wonder it's artistic looking. It's done by someone else.
Interesting. Well, anyway, so Bond gets away. The whole point of this, so Pushkin is okay. It's all...
It's a farce.
Squibs. Yeah, it's a farce. Squibs, and he's taking off his vest, and it's all like blood packs and everything.
Yeah, his lady had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, she's like, oh. So anyway, speaking of ladies, there's a couple of ladies checking out Bond, and they're
oh,
like,
yeah, because they play saxophone music, so of course they're ladies.
Yeah, but they don't play the Bond theme, which is okay. Like in the...
Like in Octopussy.
Which one was that? Was it Octopussy? Yeah, right. Where he plays his theme, he plays and he's like, oh, that's the guy you mean. Yeah, so they pick him up and they put him in their convertible. Then they pull a gun on him and they take him to this yacht, and it's Felix.
Yeah. The most boring Felix Leiter of all Felix Leiters.
Oh my God. Wow. This guy is a drip. Wow.
John Terry is this Felix. I don't remember him from anything else.
I know he was in 24.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but he had like a goatee and he was older, but then I think he was a bad guy. I can't remember. It's been so long since I watched the show, but he was in Lost too.
He was in Lost and Full Metal Jacket.
Full
Metal Jacket. He's been around, but not a great.
Yeah,
he doesn't have much to do, so whatever.
He's like, what the hell? His only
His only glider appearance.
Yeah, because the next one, it's a different guy and he almost gets killed. Yes. So, where are we here? Nekros, goes back and they're like, hey, good job. He says, I didn't kill him. Bond killed him.
When is Joe Don Baker eating the lobster in like with a like real angrily eating lobster? Is that this scene?
That was back at the banana hammock.
He was just like tearing into that thing and like he didn't, he wasn't using any of the little like things to break up the, he was just all of this air hand.
It's like in Splash, he's just like eating the whole thing with shells and everything.
So yeah, they said, no, Bond killed him, and Koskov says, I told you so. And then he gets a call in his 80s big cell phone. I start to kind of lose track. So Bond and Kara are there. She shakes him up a martini.
Yeah, she makes martini, yeah.
And he tells her the truth about everything that's going on, that Koskov is not, a good guy or whatever. It turns out his martini was poisoned.
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 And that girl is poisoned.
And then Koskov comes in. I guess you're just hanging out there. They take Bond away. This whole thing. They're pretending to give him a heart transplant.
Yeah. I like the name that's on his card. It's like, I wish I could remember. I should have wrote it down. It's like James Bondoff or something.
Yeah, it's like Jerry Bondelhoff or something like that. It's coming up on
James Ski Bondsky.
I'll tell you what it is because it's coming. It's coming up. Yeah, I'll come back in.
So I guess the whole point of the thing, it's just sort of a cover because the real thing is they're smuggling diamonds. The ice that is keeping the heart cold it's actually diamonds or whatever. It's not a real
heart. Jerry Bondoff.
Why don't
that would have been a good one to remember to do as our name at the beginning.
Yeah, right. So they're on like a plane, and Bond wakes up.
A lot of use out of this same plane. They use it at the beginning when they jump out. They use it here. They use it at the end.
Yeah. Well, hey. You're spending all your money on Jeeps.
Yeah, we drop too many Jeeps. We can't afford more than one plane.
Handle like eggs.
She says she's been a fool. Kara said she's been a fool.
But yeah, only after a banana hammock goes to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's right. He goes to the bathroom. Bond says, no, it's just a front. He ices diamonds. And then, before they drag him away, he says to get my key ring, which is just like in his luggage or whatever. Like, it's not hard. Like, they were like, oh, here's a key ring. I mean, I guess they don't suspect that it's, a key device. Weird,
that's the genius of a Bond gadget. It's just an everyday thing.
I guess so. I guess you're right. So, yeah, she gets it out of the overhead compartment. And when they land, and she kind of shows him like she's got it. But meanwhile, then Koskov just dumps her. says, she's a defector. And he's like, and he tells everybody he's on a secret state mission, which is obviously not that secret because he's told everybody.
It was a secret until now.
Yeah, I guess. So when they go to this jail, they bring Bond into this jail and he whistles and the chain goes off and it's like stun gas, right? But it doesn't actually knock them out. It just kind of...
it just does it kind of fall for a second and then get up.
Yeah. And then Bond is able to fight them. It's kind of typical fight stuff. His hands are handcuffed, but Kara hits a guy with a bucket. You know, it is kind of Raiders, I guess.
Yeah.
In that respect. But that's not what you were going to talk about. But
no, it's more when the plan part.
There's another prisoner there. I kind of like it. He kind of like helps them. He reaches through the bars to like help them out a little bit. They defeat the guards. He's like, hey, give me the key. He throws him the key. So that's nice. But she's like, at least we're together. So
this jailer guy is fucking awesome.
Really? He is a typical sort of like 80s.
He should have been way more sweaty. He should have had big pit sweat stains. And just been like more disgusting. He looked too clean.
Well,
yeah, his shirt's too clean.
Yeah, he needs to be missing a tooth or something too.
So they get on a stair car because they're at like an air base, I guess. I forgot to take note of that, but because they just landed. So yeah.
Yes. So yes.
They're on a. And they use the stair car to jump over the fence. And then the guy they just let out of jail kind of helps them get in touch with this Afghan resistance.
Yeah, here's where the movie ages even worse.
So what was, yeah, they ended up. Time. Yeah, right. I mean, unbeknownst to the filmmakers, obviously, well, what would happen
later? Yeah, but no one could predict. I mean, Rambo 3 is dedicated to them, so.
It's even worse.
You're like, that's
yeah. Yeah. It's a different time. So there's this guy Cameron Shaw, and he is the leader of this resistance. And Bond is like, we got to go back. And they're like, nah. Yeah. But if he, they'll help him out if he does something for them. I don't really understand, whatever. Yeah, but
I don't either. At this point, he gets.
Should we just start to kind of?
Yeah, he gets himself ahead. Cleaned up, and then he kind of looks like '80s Mike Nesmith to me.
Yeah, it's without like rocking a kufi, and like they're all dressed in the garb of the time of the area.
Yeah, it was the time, and yeah. So they're like, okay, we'll leave at sunrise. So he goes back to Kara and he says he's going to go to the base. You'll go with Cameron, wherever the hell he's going.
Yeah,
and then she beats him with a pillow. Oh, yeah.
Calls him a horse's ass.
But anyway, she doesn't want it. She wants to go with him. But then they probably do it, I'm going to say, All right, good. So this is the next day. There's like a big meeting. Cameron is selling opium, I guess. And right, so it's so, the diamonds, the opium.
I did have this figured out at one point, and now I don't anymore. But it's like, he Bond, they're like, you know, we got to sell them the opium so we get the money to buy more guns. But something else is in there. So that Krabby, they need to stop. Oh, so that they sell them the opium to the, but so then. Krabby's gonna sell the opium for more money and he'll be able to pay Whittaker for fuck it. Right. I don't fucking know. Was that right?
I think that sounds about right. But they're using the diamonds that with the heart, you know, to buy the opium.
Yeah, because he's behind on his bills to Whittaker.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And so then
because he's like, you owe me that money.
Yeah, so Bond's letting this go through so that Mike Nesmith can get his money or whatever. I can't remember what his name is.
Isn't Bond Mike Nesmith?
No. I was saying that the guy they freed from jail.
Yeah. Right.
The beard. And so they let it go through, and then Bond's going to blow up everything so that he can't pay Whittaker. So he puts a bomb in one of the.
Yeah, he disguises himself. Yeah. And he he puts a bomb in there. And meanwhile, Kara grabs Cameron's gun, Mike Nesmith's gun, and she drives.
You could call him Cameron. I could just remember his name off it.
And she rides after Bond, and they all just follow her. They're like, all right, let's do it. So,
he's going to steal the plane.
Yeah,
I didn't finish the movie this time around. I watched it like 2 months ago. So,
does Bond? Oh, does he set the bomb for 10 minutes and 30 seconds? Did I see that right? I was like, that's kind of a weird.
Wait, don't they drive onto the Jeep first because he gets stuck in the back of the Jeep and then they end up at the airfield?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of.
Yeah, all right, it doesn't matter. It's just nice, whatever. But this is the part where
he does drive through the fence. Yeah, he does drive a big tractor thing.
This is the
thing.
Part where I'm like, this could be like the scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark with the plane, you know,
right.
The jones and stuff. Yeah. But instead, it's like 10 minutes of Bond trying to run over the tire stopper.
I know. He's trying to
back up and go around it. Something, I don't know.
This is also the part. Yeah, he drives his tractor through the fence. He knocks down all the showers, and this is where you see the guy's
more
butts.
Bumps. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So Bond is driving the plane. Yeah, and like, there's just a lot of shooting and explosions, and nothing really makes a lot of sense here.
Yeah, and Yorgi Wile E. Coyote's it blows up, but then it just is like just covered in soot kind of thing. He's
okay.
Like, I'm all right, you know, and yeah, it's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. She's like driving a Jeep and like he lowers the ramp because she's all like, James! Yeah. Or sort of the typical Bond movie.
Here's a little knowledge drop for you. They can't actually drive a Jeep onto a plane like that. So they just got a giant moving van and painted it up like the back of a plane. And did it that way. Right. Yeah.
Wow. That's
it's like good. Illegal to drive onto a plane. Not that anyone would.
Bro, yeah.
But when the plane is in motion, you can't just drive and keep onto the back of it.
Even in like a movie, like, you know.
Especially in a movie.
Okay. So Necros jumps on in the side door of the plane. And as the plane is sort of going, he JB kind of takes off and it smashes into Koskov, but he's not dead. Like he's fine.
Yeah. Which is weird.
So now he's like, I got to go defuse my own bomb because it's on the plane. And then Necros is there and they fight. So for some reason now, as they're fighting in the back, she decides to open the ramp up. Why would you so he can fall out? Like, I don't know.
It's like when your dad is like, do something on the computer and then has to call you to go over to see him. And be like, I don't know what I did. I pressed a button here by accident. Now the whole thing's messed up. That's my take on it. She doesn't know. She's never flown a plane before.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I mean, it does help because then, like, he's able to, like, as they're fighting, there's, like, a big thing where all the opium is in this net. So the bomb is, of course, in there somewhere, too. So Bond and Necros are fighting, and they're hanging onto the net thing, and he uses Necros' knife. Necros had a knife, and he starts cutting the net. The opium is flying all over the place. Necros is hanging on to Bond's boot, and he takes the knife, and he cuts the shoelace, and Necros goes falling, and JB Bond climbs back in. The clock is still ticking, of course. He has to find his bag.
Well, I got to say, though, this stunt is pretty impressive. The stunt work itself is
great. And then the part where it's flapping up and down, that was not really meant to happen. It just, so they incorporated that into the movie, which I would also like to point out the scenes with Dalton and Necros in the, where you can see it's them. They create sort of like a paper mache landscape below them. And I'm like, this looks bad. It's better than rear projection, but it just looks like they're 3 feet off the ground. You know?
Well, yeah, so he does manage to shut the bomb off with 1 second left. So, of course. But now there's, the
cut
final...
off mid-quip when she's about to drive into, fly into
right.
the mountain. Do you like what happened to him? He got the boom!
Yeah. But that's a good line. But yeah, add a little bit of realism, I guess. He's able to pull the plane up and he drops the bomb out to blow the bridge.
And that is a great shot because that's foreground miniature there. Oh, it's not actually a real bridge. I mean, it's a real bridge with a foreground miniature that makes it look huge, like there's a giant ravine and stuff below.
Well executed. Yeah. So, and that helps Cameron, I guess. I mean, I don't really, they all are like, yay, but I don't really remember.
Yeah, everyone seems happy, I guess. Yeah.
And that's the story of the Living Daylights. No,
well, it's a little bit more, but of course, because they're flying along, and of course, because it's James Bond, the plane is low on fuel. They use the Jeep.
Fly, yes. Land, no.
Right. So they jump in that Jeep. They use the parachute. They kind of parachute out the back, and the plane crashes. And he says, yeah, like it's like a whole big thing. The Jeep landing.
It's great, actually. That's a miniature, and I had no idea. It looks so, that's the case where it looked really good.
Looked very good.
Very well. Very good. So Bond says he knows a restaurant.
He knows a good restaurant.
Yeah, I know a good restaurant around here. So we go back. Felix is back. Good old Felix. Boring old Felix. they go to the whack museum with all the whacks. Joe Don Baker.
Military stuff.
Military.
Yeah, reenacting the Battle of Gettysburg or something.
Yeah, he looks like he's playing. He's like, oh, I'm playing. Yeah, you want to play figures?
Yeah.
I guess when they were shooting at that location, the guy that owned the place had all that stuff, and they were like, oh, let's just put it in the movie. And they wrote it into the script.
That's just like Durst and the Firestarter would have done.
Yeah, that's right. Well, might as well use this.
Yeah.
Oh.
Look, there's a military guy filling up his car at the gas station. Film it quick. We'll figure out a way to put it in.
Yeah. There goes an ambulance down the street.
Film it.
Well, that's probably not that good, but yeah. So yeah, Joe Don has this like cool gun and this body armor and everything. There's kind of a goofy fight here. But
yeah, this part is kind of stupid.
And they just kind of had to wrap this up, I guess. He uses his key ring, whistles, and like, does it blow up the statue? Yeah, like something that knocks a statue down into him. And then Pushkin comes to the rescue. He arrests Koskov, and that's pretty much the end of that. The end.
Well,
we get
the end of them, and then your little sort of them. Then we see Kara is now like the headliner for the symphony as the cello player
and with the bullet hole.
Yeah, Gogol,
first chair, you would say.
Yes, General Gogol shows up for a brief cameo, and then Mike Nesmith and all his guys dressed up with like their bandoliers and shit on. Where they're like, oh, we have trouble with airport security. You understand how it goes. And she's like, where's James? And they're like, oh, he's on assignment. Sorry about that. And so she goes back to her room and cries. And then he whistles and then goes off. And he says, I'm not going to miss this performance. They make out. And then the movie's over.
Yeah, there's like when she goes in, there's martinis waiting for her. And she's like, oh. And I assume they did.
Someone that likes
drugged martinis.
Yeah. Well, that would be start a whole new.
Like, just getting back at you for earlier.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the end. But no aha at the end of the movie. This song called "If There Was a Man." I've never Amazon lists like, oh, what
that's
song?
That's the Pretenders song, isn't it?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the second Pretenders song in it. There's two.
Mm-hmm.
When he's killing everyone with his headphones, that's the other song.
Interesting. I never heard it, and Amazon didn't know who it was, or they didn't put it. Maybe they didn't say who it was. But interesting. So yeah, that is the Living Daylights. What do we think?
Living Daylights.
Here we go.
Random.org. Tell us who goes first. I'll hide behind. Yeah. Everybody said everything.
No,
well, you should explain.
I should have done this earlier.
Wait. No. You're doing it. Fuck it. You're doing it live. Explain to the listeners. Here we are at 5:01. How we're doing the who gets to do the final thoughts first and why.
Right. And why. Well, random.org is verifying that I am human. This may take a few seconds.
I guess I'll explain it. So,
all right.
Since we get a little tiffs, a little fights about Durson always telling me, Clay, what do you think? Yeah.
I don't know why it's such a big deal. It's just
I don't know, but it is.
It is. It's a thing. And it's like, oh, I always go first. Oh, you go first. No, I don't want to go first. So now we're having the computer decide. Did our random.org let you in?
All right. Our randomizer selected
Clay. And it has to go, it selected Clay.
Clay, Durst, and John is the order.
So, oh, no, I'm going to have funny. My always go usual excuse.
You're always last to go. Well, you guys said everything I already said.
Well,
do you want me to do it again?
Let's do two out of three?
No!
Let's do it opposite. I'll go first. Clay goes first. Right. How about
Okay, fine.
You know what? I like this movie more than I did when I watched it again for the first time a couple of years ago during the pandemic. I'm going to give it a B. I think Dalton is a really good Bond. He handles the action really well. He looks the part. I know a couple of his jokes fall flat for some people, but I actually like his deadpan delivery. His like gritting through his teeth delivery of it. I feel that the villains are weak and the story is a little confusing. They really didn't need...
The leads are weak?
Like, what?
The fucking leads are weak?
Glengarry Glen Ross.
John Glengarry. Anyway.
But I love the A-ha song, as I'm a fan of theirs, like an actual fan. I'm not just saying that. I have the album that they released a year and a half ago and stuff like that.
Right.
So I'm legit.
You're a take on me. You're a take on me fangirl.
Yeah, that's it. Just the video. That's the only
that's all you know. Yeah. That's all you know.
I do feel John Glenn's directing is lackluster. But I could say that about pretty much all his movies. So did I already give it the score? I'm giving it a B.
You said B. Yeah, yes. B.
So
very good. Very well. Very well. So according to the randomizer, I was second. Are we still doing that?
Yeah, you're still
even
second.
Even though we went opposite. So what? I'm still second.
Clay was first. You were second. I was third. And then it would be me. It would be me, you, and then Clay. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So all right.
Randomizers really worked out well.
I know.
It still gives it it gives it something to go by.
Yeah, I like it. I like Timothy Dalton. Actually, yeah, in retrospect, watching it now, I like Timothy Dalton as Bond. I thought he handled himself pretty well. I remember reading years ago, probably around when they cast Pierce Brosnan, that like Timothy Dalton always looked like he was trying to solve a difficult math problem.
Yeah, I remember that too. It was like Entertainment Weekly said that.
I thought that was like a good way to describe it, but also I think he was just serious. It was a different take. And there are sometimes I feel like when they gave him a goofy line and he maybe was kind of like, I don't, this isn't the way I want to go, but
this line is kind of dumb.
Yeah, it's fine. Most of the time, he's good and he's believable. Like, you can believe that he's doing all this stuff. Whereas sometimes Roger Moore was like this goofy old man, like, look at me, I'm a spy.
It's like, you just walk into a place with a sign over his head, that neon sign that says, I'm James Bond, where's my martini, you know?
Yeah. But Roger Moore, you can buy it. I mean, Timothy Dalton, you believe it. So. And the only problem is I think the movie itself is a little weak. And like you said, the bad guys are weak. The fucking leads are weak. But also the story I was looking at randomizer again. The story is needlessly complicated, as I pointed out. I completely lost track of
it's like whatever a Simpsons episode on. Where it starts off in one place and ends up in a completely different place. It's like it switched movies halfway through it. Once I get to Afghanistan, that's where I'm like, it's kind of losing me a bit.
Yeah, I was completely lost. And I was kind of like almost embarrassed. Like, geez, I don't want to tell these guys that I don't know what's
going on. No, don't worry. You know what? Everybody that reviews this movie is like, I don't really know what's going on.
But it doesn't have to. I mean, I feel like they were, like the movie that they were telling for the first half or so. I was like, okay, I get this. Death to spies. We don't want to kill spies because we're spies. Let's stop them doing it. And then it's like, oh, we're in, the desert and there's these guys and we're going to sell this fake heart, the ice and the diamonds and the opium. And I'm like, oh, Christ. So that definitely knocks it down. I don't even know. I don't know. I don't want to say C. C is average, right?
Yeah.
but maybe it's a little better than that. Like, but it's definitely, that makes it a little hard to watch for me, I'm not going to lie. But the performances are great. I don't love Miriam Diabo. She seems kind of like not good. I don't know. She's not a, I don't know. I can't buy, I don't buy her that much.
She's sort of the everyday person thrown into extraordinary situation. So I try to look at it that way. If I was thrown into the situation, what I would I be like? I would probably be making dumb decisions too.
No, it's not that. I think her line delivery isn't great. You know, like she's like, oh,
yeah,
Krabby is, oh, Yorgi.
She's playing naive, but like kind of amping it up a little too much.
Yeah. I guess I'll say B minus. I'll go B minus.
Fair enough.
How about that? But, you know, definitely watchable and fun at most parts, but the plot is just ridiculous. So that's what I got.
Okay, randomizer picking me.
Who's, yeah. Clay!
No Emmys, well, no Emmys, stop.
I gotta say, I listened to the James Bonding, the Matt Gourley podcast. I listened to that one. And they had some special guests on there. And one of the special guests said this is his absolute favorite James Bond movie. But to echo what John said, he's like, I've seen this movie 40 times. I still couldn't tell you what's going on in this movie. I don't understand it at all. Like, but I love it. I love it. But that's his opinion. But I thought it just like speaks to the story part.
Wrong with this, but I think Christopher Nolan said that Timothy Dalton was his favorite Bond. I may be wrong about that though. Don't quote me on that, Peter.
Or Chris. I gotta say the things that I really enjoyed about this were I like a Cold War, child of the '80s, G.I. Joe communism thing, and then kind of like, yeah, I guess maybe it was more relevant with the Mujahideen in the news or something at the time. It might have made more sense in context or whatever. But yeah, this last 45 minutes of the movie is just like confusing. And I don't know. I mean, you know who the bad guys are and you know you're rooting for James Bond and his girl. But what's going on? I don't know. I just don't know. But the first
just
like,
give me some explosions.
Yeah, well, give me some explosions. So. Yeah, give me shove a guy into some weird like gas cleaning tube and shove him off into the free side of the Cold War.
Yeah, you know, like,
give me
that
all that stuff.
East and West Berlin still in, right?
Yeah. And give me the cool planes, give me the cool Q gadgets.
Give me some side boob.
Yeah.
And
give me you know what, I'm only realizing this now, but like Moneypenny is down in, or I don't even know if it's down because it seems like Universal Exports is like in a building, but like M's office is still M's office. It's all oak and there's like a leather door with like, you know what I mean, it's like, but like Moneypenny, she's in the context of like being with Q down there, and you know that's where her desk is and her computer and stuff, which is just like just a little bit different than like just being outside of M's office, and so that James Bond could throw his hat onto the hat rack or whatever. But yeah, so anyways, I'm gonna give this my rating, and then I'll say a little bit about Timothy Dalton. I think that I'm gonna give this a B+, and I really enjoy him as James Bond. To me, he looks the part of the fictional James Bond that's in my mind. Roger Moore doesn't really, I'm not going to say I don't like the Roger Moore movies, like we've done a few of them, they're great to watch and everything, but like I think of Pierce Brosnan and Timothy Dalton more as like what James, getting James Bond to play James Bond would be like. He definitely looks the part. However, you know, he grimaces his face or like makes his expressions. I find it very charming and very much exactly like he's a cool dude. He's a cool 1987 dude. And I wanted to be a cool 1987 dude. I had like a Bill Cosby sweater and I popped my collar. You know what I mean? Like he's the guy. I wish he had another movie. I wish there was more of him. So I give it a B+. I'm not going to like go crazy and give it an A. You're right. The story's a kind of a mess, but I really do my idealized James Bond in my mind. He's the closest to it. I love Daniel Craig, but like, I just really think that he's like almost the perfect casting looks wise and sort of attitude wise. So I give it a B+.
It's very good.
I wanted to add just a quick little bit as well, because I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but their original idea for The Living Daylights was to do a prequel, like Young Bond, how he becomes Bond. And Cubby was like, nah, no one wants to see that story.
Now, okay, take that thought, and can you imagine Timothy Dalton as the prequel James Bond? I think that like makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really would like be like in a few years he becomes, you know, Sean Connery or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I have this huge making of the Living Daylights book, but I read it like 15 years ago or whenever it first came out, and it gave
sense of the plot. maybe there'll be some answers in here.
I read it so long ago, but it did give the full like plot synopsis of what that would have been. It was like James Bond's mentor was doing this and that, and I don't remember it now because I read it so long ago, and I should have just boned up on it, but I didn't really have time. So
it's kind of funny. We were talking about, you go back and listen to some of our other, the Die Another Day one kind of specifically, it was, we talked about like they were going to have Sean Connery make a cameo, and that would have kind of changed, you know, like, oh, Bond is just a code name. And then it's almost like the next movie with Daniel Craig was like would have lent credence to that. But like we had talked about the different Bonds and stuff. And one of the things, one of our plans was to actually do, we had two ideas. We were going to talk about James Bond movies. We're going to take each actor and do either the first and last or the best and worst.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Oh, right.
But it's interesting because we were talking about the different actors and stuff, and because one of the things we were saying was Pierce Brosnan, it was kind of the same. Like the best and worst were and the first and last.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, with Timothy Dalton, I mean, he only did two, but like he's a better – Pierce Brosnan's great. And obviously Daniel Craig is great, but yeah, like, I don't know. Like Timothy Dalton, there's literally nothing wrong with how he plays ball. I like it. I think he's,
I do too.
I feel like he's gotten a bad rap or something.
I think people are finally coming around to him though. He's gone under a reevaluation of his two films, and that's the problem. He only did two.
I could see why Chris Nolan or other people, or maybe even myself would say that he's the way I said it is the best way to describe it. Like getting James Bond to play James Bond. Like,
yeah,
obviously Moore and Connery are like, they're James Bond, but there's something about him that maybe it's like the Fleming thing, or like they imagined what I think James Bond should be doing in my mind is exactly him.
I recently saw the movie of one of the people that Fleming thought would make a great James Bond, and I disagreed completely. Hoagie Carmichael was someone he was like, he'd make a great James Bond, and I saw him, and no. I'd never seen him in anything until I watched the Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall movie from the 40s, and he's like a piano player. He's a musician, and I'm like, no, this would not have worked. That is not. But Dalton, yes.
Yeah. And
even though Dalton sometimes looks a little like Bono to me in certain shots.
Oh, well.
That's just there you go.
I think it's all kind of like what you are looking for. If Christopher Nolan is looking for like real spy stuff, like real, like international intrigue and that type of stuff. Like, oh, we've got this person's a defector and this, you know, whatever. He's sneaking people across borders and whatever. That's like,
yeah. And I don't even think this story services that well, but the actor does, you know?
Well, but it's in there, you know, the elements in there.
I'll have to dig out the synopsis for the planned third Dalton movie, and it is just fucking batshit crazy. It's like it's like inspired by like the Terminator, so there's like robots and just weird. It's like not quite, you know,
the property of a lady
or whatever. Yeah, and he's
what a great title.
Like he's got
wasn't
be
that the name of
rodeo
the
clown or something? And the property of lady was the Fabergé egg. In
right.
And like he was gonna dress as like a rodeo clown or something, and then go against like Bigfoot and the Muscle Machines, and it is just the fucking most wackadoo thing ever. And I could not picture Dalton in it after his two movies were much more, well, this one less so than the next one, but next one's more grounded in reality. But
yeah, forgive the pun, but he, it's almost as if he dodged a bullet with that.
Yes,
but yes. Because you consider even like No Time to Die or some of the Roger Moore movies, you know, some of the Pierce Brosnan movies, like they almost get to like a Spider-Man 3 problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Where they like are trying to do too much, trying to make it fit exactly where it should be. Whereas like, you know, I probably still will say like Her Majesty's Secret Service like is a great fucking James Bond movie and not talked about it at all. It might be my favorite, but it might be my favorite, but maybe Timothy Dalton, maybe he's my favorite James Bond. Or and Craig and Brosnan, you know what I mean? It's like it's kind of like if they you get to do these films and they just kind of it's either Hollywood or whatever the big problem is that they're just like, oh well, like here, put the fucking Terminator robots in it. It's like okay, I can kind of see how you could have a cyborg have him fight a cyborg or whatever, but like I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, don't. Well,
yeah, it's don't in a way.
Just don't.
Yeah, I mean, the cyborg sounded like the least offensive part of the like. You know,
right. The yeah, that you sort of makes sense.
There's a lot of other dumb shit in there. Like
a lady falls in love with or something too. So oh, I mean,
but like him in the circus or whatever you said. What was he?
Yeah,
doing?
He was like going to be like a rodeo clown. I don't know if he was like rodeo. Just like in a rodeo at least. He disguised himself as a cowboy. So.
Well, yeah. So like one of the things I was thinking in a way like when you. Maybe him not doing a third one is better, right?
Because yeah, it worked
out. Yeah, I agree.
Die
I
Another Day is like the worst one that Brosnan did.
Yeah, and that's the one.
I think No Time to Die is probably the worst one that Craig did, right?
Yeah.
His last one.
For sure.
So like,
and
yeah,
Diamonds Are Forever and Never Say Never Again, which are officially two of the last Connery ones. Those are both terrible too.
Yeah, so maybe you're better off getting cut off and not getting to do your last one, because the last ones of these actors are usually the worst ones. So.
I agree.
Yeah. Maybe good on you. You, as you say, Clay, dodged a bullet, not have to do.
And
your
you know what? I would have been happy if Craig didn't even make Spectre. I don't really like that movie. You know, like.
No, but it's better than No Time to Die, I think.
Oh, yeah. For sure, it's better than No Time to Die. But if he had just three in Skyfall, was where he peaked.
Yeah, he would.
That
yeah,
would have been fucking.
Everyone
awesome.
Would have been like, "He's the best Bond ever."
Yeah.
Yep. That fugly. Did anyone accuse
Bond.
Timothy Dalton of being fugly?
I don't
because he had
don't,
grimace yeah, mask.
He's a handsome
face.
Man.
And he's great on if you ever watched Doom Patrol, like he was awesome.
Yeah, everyone says he was also great in Penny Dreadful with several Bond alumni.
I have not seen that as John.
Well, Mrs. Elder was talking about. She's like, we should watch that again. I was like, that show is sort of like how Mad Men was to me. It was like brilliant for a season and then shit and then good again. You know, so you got to kind of hang in there in season two. It gets a little goofy if you watch it.
And then sometimes like with, especially with like a period piece thing, like I don't know if I'll be bored enough to watch Mad Men again, even though I love Mad Men. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I could just sit through the whole thing.
My problem with Mad Men is that at a certain point, every character on that show is unlikable, and it made me just feel shitty to watch it.
Yeah, there were definitely parts where you're like, oh, they went there.
Yeah, I almost gave up on it several times. But my friend Chuck, who I used to talk to about Mad Men every week, I kept on the show because we could keep talking about it.
Well, I was thinking about that too. Like, I wonder, because I kind of definitely fell away from it at one point, but I went back at the end. I'm like, oh, wait, this is pretty good. So I was thinking about maybe revisiting, but I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, Timothy Dalton, though, I didn't watch Penny Dreadful, but maybe I
yeah,
will.
He's cool. He's cool. He looks cool too for like a guy that was about 70 when he did it. He looked real good, goatee and stuff. He was very, very handsome man.
And he was also great in that movie with Fran Drescher. What was that movie?
Beautician and the Beast.
Beautician, wasn't that him?
Talk to the Hand.
Yeah. Isn't that cute?
But he's legitimately great in what's that one? I'm gonna call it the wrong thing. Hot Fuzz. I was almost gonna say Super Fuzz.
There is a movie, Hot Fuzz.
Wait, is that
he
it?
Is the in one Hot with... Fuzz?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh, he is.
He's
in
the
Hot
bad
Fuzz.
Guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
he is,
okay.
Yeah.
I did not know that. I didn't remember that. Did I miss that? All right. Well, there we go. Check out the sort of underrated Timothy Dalton. Why not?
Good. And he averages out pretty good with us. We got a B+, a B, and a B-. He goes B across the board.
But I mean, as far as him, I give him a whatever. I don't know. We don't grade the actors, but it's only the story that brings the movie down for me. It's
I'll give an A- as Bond.
Yeah, as him as Bond, he's there. He's A-. All right, we should probably wrap this up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget, check us out, leaguepodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts, especially YouTube as well. And let us know what you think over there. There's comments and things. But check it out. And
I'm going to be reposting an old episode that we did in the pandemic because it's now the 40th anniversary of Secret Wars.
Oh, no shit.
And so we did a podcast about that. So I'm going to be posting that on YouTube where it is not currently. Check it out.
Keep your eyes peeled for that. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks to you.
We'll talk to you later. Talk to the hand.